Okay, so let's get started. My name is Nadine Morelli. I'm a PM on the Microsoft project team. Among owning other things for the past 3 years since I've been with Microsoft, I've worked on in areas of security, mostly managing the Project Online service and working and supporting on third-party APIs. I'd like to thank you all for coming. I know this is the last session of a long week at Ignite. I hope you guys have found it very valuable, and I appreciate making you guys making it out this far and attending this session. With my colleagues, my goal was to have 5 people, so I think I've almost doubled that, so I'm very impressed. Feel free to interrupt and ask questions anytime, because I wanted this to be as interactive as possible. This being a session on APIs, some of the questions might be difficult, so we'll have to get back to you on how to answer some of them, but feel free to ask questions. How many people here have written a project, either a client add-in or a project online or project server application? Has anyone written a SharePoint online application using CSOM or REST? Okay, just gives me an idea of how much to cover in which areas. So my goal of today is to make sure that you guys understand what types of add-ins can be created in Project Online, understanding the project client and the project service API. So I'll use project service and Project Online interchangeably, and we'll talk a bit more. I'll cover a little bit of project server as well. I'm sure you guys have heard of the Flow, Microsoft Flow. So I'll do a quick demo on just creating a simple flow between project and sending an email. And then I'm going to start show you guys how to get up and running writing an add-in. So the project client is heavily built on top of the Office platform, and Project Online is built heavily on top of SharePoint. So this is kind of the quote I think about when I talk about these two different things. Basically, because we're built on top of these other systems, we can take advantage of all the sort of richness they provide, and also we kind of have similar APIs or similar sort of API paradigms. That's what I was asking, if you've done SharePoint before, project, other than learning the project ecosystem, it's a similar type of API. So the project client APIs. We support 2 APIs in the project client, the legacy VBA VSTO APIs, and the newer Office add-ins, JavaScript API for Office. And we specifically support the task pane, which is that write pane that flies in when you want to use an add-on. The reason why you would write a project client add-in is because you want to add something which has a single project focus. You won't be able to access other project data from that MPP file. You'll be able to access a lot of the project task and assignment data within the MPP file. And you'll be able to call external sources, and you'll be able to call Project Online or SharePoint lists or whatnot in order to show stuff in your add-in and sort of make it interactive that way. So just a couple scenarios why someone might use an add-in. Some of the common ones are people will write an add-in to validate a bunch of business rules in the project so that a PM can sit there, run the add-in, and it could tell them what's missing and before they go ahead and publish the project. Sometimes milestones, they'll go to 100%, so there will be a sample add-in I'll post shortly, which will mark milestones as complete as needed. You could figure out the resource availability within a project, view-related documents, which are linked to a project, query project online data, and there'll be a sample concept. I'll show you copy work packages with Project Online APIs, which can be extended to be used inside the project add-in, and like view SharePoint lists, and so on. So there's many, many more. I just want to come up with sort of a wide range of them so you get an idea of what you'll be able to do with these APIs. So Project Professional 2016, when you do an add-in, especially the task pane type, it flies into on the right side there. And essentially, that task pane is a browser rendering HTML and JavaScript. And so when you write an add-in, what you're doing is you're using the JavaScript libraries that we've published to actually interact with the project. So you can ask for the first task in the list, a task by its ID, manipulate task, read task data. Now, that just gives you access to the data inside the project. So obviously, if you want to do something a bit more dynamic, that HTML file can be hosted somewhere else. So you could host that file in Project Online as an add-in. You could host it in Azure. And now it's not just necessarily a simple HTML file. It could be a dynamic, like an ASPX page. It could be a JavaScript, servlets, like any type of technology. We don't care. It's just it's just a browser page that we interact with, and the browser will render and interact with whatever JavaScript is on that page. And since the page is running off a server or service, you can do that sort of client-side scripting and render the page as you need to render it. Finally, because you would be hosting this off something external to the project client, you can then also make calls to your service to get data, to display data through AJAX. This is to make life with the same origin policy, but there's some other workarounds for the same origin policy, but this is kind of the most common case. Someone will take a page on an IIS server, .NET, whatever, and then the client can make AJAX calls to where to get data it needs. Recently, I apologize, it says Agave. That was kind of the internal name. I thought I corrected it. It's called the JavaScript API for Office. So we shipped JavaScript for Office in Project Client 2013, and that included the being able to read task data. And last year, we shipped the ability to write and modify fields on the task. And then in November, we will be shipping the API so that you can actually create tasks, because you weren't able to create tasks before. You'll be able to also interact with custom fields in the project, and obviously a few additional fields like the project name, the current user signed in, et cetera. And in the past, you could only look at the one task that was highlighted, but now we will support being able to look at or manipulate all the selected tasks. So I'm going to show you a quick demo. So this is Visual Studio. You would need, there's an add-in, Visual Studio for Office. I'll cover that a bit more later. But those are the two things you would need to be able to easily write an add-in and debug it. So what I'm showing now is the home page. It's basically going to show the number of late tasks. And it's going to come up with three buttons: get me the task name, set a new task name, and create a task. And so I'll quickly go through the demo, and then we'll just walk through the code. So go to project, and in debug mode, I can actually bring my add-in in and start interacting with it. So as you can see, first of all, it's gone through the entire project already and said that there's 8 tasks which are not done, whose due date is now in the past. I'll click on this particular task. I can display the task name. You'll see it down here. To show you this is not a fake demo, if I click set task name, it'll change the name to the current time and date. And then one of the other things we mentioned that's going to be available very soon is being able to create a task. So create task, in this case, there could be a scenario where there's a common set of tasks you want to have created over and over again, and your add-in could go ahead, and I could, as a PM, go to a specific place and say, create these block of tasks which are reusable. And so these ones are kind of fictitious. They're just going to say 1 to 10. But as you can see, you can go ahead and create tasks. So in the code, some of the code here is using some of the JavaScript promises and stuff in jQuery. So I'm going to focus on the exact code you need to interact with project. So the first thing would be is, if you notice when I hit create task, it created a task where I was in the project. So the first thing you need to be able to do is get the current ID or the GUID for the current task. So it's very simple. There's a method we have, get selected task async. If it's successful, result.value will give you the ID. If it's not, it'll show an error message. And so when I wanted to display the task, I called getSelectedByID, and if that was successful, I'm going to call getTaskField. Here's the ID of the task from the above method. I want to get the name, and then I get the name out, and then I'm just using sort of the app notification thing, and that's all you need to do to display a single field in a task. If you want to read more data from a task, like the name, start date, end date, etc., then you would need to make multiple asynchronous calls. Right now, you're limited to retrieving one piece of data at a time. So updating a task. So I got the current date. I once again said, get me the selected task. I then say I want to set some fields, set the task, which task I want to set, give it the field I want to set, and give it the new name, and then obviously update the name. And those are two simple things. Once again, if you want to set multiple fields, you would have to call set multiple times. The final thing I'll show quickly is being able to create a task. So this is just my task list, which was 1 to 10. And I'm gonna loop through and create all the tasks. I'm doing some stuff with promises, some Ajax stuff or async stuff, because I wanna make sure that I create the second task after the first task is finished. And JavaScript naturally would say create all 10 tasks at once, just because they're all asynchronous calls. So this is just some stuff to make sure that I create the next task after the first one is done. But the code is simple. I create the task. I say where in the list I want to create it, the name of it, and if async is successful, then the task has been created. So I didn't do any error checking here, but I hopefully didn't get any errors during my demo, so that worked out well. Sorry? Correct. We're expecting to ship it. We're hoping to check it in by October, and then with all the different sort of PUs, CUs, and click-to-run updates, we're hopefully that November it'll come in. And that includes the ability to read and write custom fields. But if you want to be able to find out the valid values of a custom field or the lookup and all that fun stuff, you would have to make Ajax calls to the service using REST, and I'll show you examples how to do that, not custom fields exactly, but how to do that in general, and then you'll be able to get the definitions of the custom fields. So just reading and writing the custom fields, you'll be able to do with the JavaScript that's going to be shipped, and then to get the definitions, you'll have to make a separate call to the service. So that's it for the client. Any other questions? Okay. So I'm going to spend some time talking about the online APIs. So Project Online has one supported API. It's called CSOM, the client-side object model. I believe you said you've used SharePoint, so most of the infrastructure and concept is the same. CSOM ships with sort of three different sort of entry points. One of them is a native .NET client library. The second one is the JavaScript, JSON JavaScript object model. And then there's obviously the REST endpoint. The other thing I want to call out for what's available in Project Online is eventing. So there's a bunch of events that you can listen to or subscribe to that will make a call. And so those things, for example, when a project is published, you can Project Online will make a call to an endpoint that lets you pass some information in, save, and that other systems can know to get up, react, either go read that published data or go do something with that information. So there are three types of add-ins you could write. And they have kind of three different sort of focuses depending on what you're trying to do. So the first one, if you search online, it's called a SharePoint hosted add-in. So basically, the way the flow works is that you start by logging in to SharePoint or Project, and then you click on a link, which will take you to an add-in that SharePoint is hosting for you. So it's the entire flow starts from within Office 365. There is no way to execute server-side code. The way the contract works is you're going to upload a bunch of JavaScript, CSS, HTML, whatever you want to be rendered in the browser. And the browser will get redirected to this add-in web page, download all these assets, and then start executing them. So your business logic would all be in your JavaScript, and certain types of validation and stuff you can do, but all the logic exists inside the browser. The browser, there's sort of two APIs the browser, your JavaScript can call. There's a JavaScript object model, which is basically a bunch of objects that represent our REST endpoints and the REST endpoint that we support. And through this model, you have access to all the server-side resources still. Like, you can sit there and read resources, projects. You can create and edit custom lists. And it supports add-in plus user authorization. And I'll talk a bit more about that later. That's very important. That's one of the gotchas that I keep hitting every time I try to create an app. The second one is a provider-hosted add-in. So this flow is slightly different. It still starts from Project or SharePoint Online. When the user clicks on your particular add-in in Office 365, it'll redirect to the server that you've chosen to set up. Part of that redirection is that we will include a bunch of callback and context and token information. And then the provider site can take that information and start rendering whatever pages it needs. It can be a web app, web service data, it could be another site in SPO, it could be in Azure, it could be in anywhere outside of Office 365, doesn't matter. And essentially, with that context and token info, that service can now call SharePoint and Project Online as if they were that user, and sort of provide a nice interaction that way. All the business logic in this case will be hosted on your external site. So for I'll cover examples in a few minutes. And the two ways that that external site can now call SharePoint and Project Online is through the C-sharp client-side native library. So if it was a .NET platform, like ASP.NET, you can make calls to using the object model library we have, or once again, using REST. And also, this has the add-in plus user authorization restriction, which I'll cover, as I said. The third sort of way people generally write apps is basically a completely external app. It starts, the complete experience starts externally. So you can think of a Windows app, a mobile phone, sort of a syncing application. And basically, the developer can write the app in the language of their choice, in the way they want to use it. If they choose .NET, they could take advantage of the CSOM library, or otherwise they can use REST, which is sort of the common standard. And in this case, it uses user authorization. So some scenarios. So for example, if you created a hosted app, you could create your own people picker PDP control. Since the browser doesn't need to call anything else, it just needs to be able to call Project Online, get the list of resources, and you can kind of make your own sort of search experience, something that we don't have today in Project. You could do sort of a risk matrix calculator. You could figure out which tasks are late and display that to the user in your app. You could do sort of a calendaring thing where I can say, I'm going to be out of the office starting tomorrow until 3 weeks, and all the information can be stored in sort of Project Online for you, and it doesn't require anything other than writing some JavaScript. The provider-hosted add-in could do a little slightly more complicated scenarios, like you could use it to create a custom ID for a project. You could actually tell the user, don't use the Project Online create experience that's there. Click on this link to create a project, and then go through some complex workflow that's hosted externally, which in the end would call Project Online and create a project. So you can think of all those type of scenarios. And then something that when I'm creating a timesheet, I want to validate all my timesheets, there could be some external flow that could do that. Or you could have an external system that does your timesheet entry that will call back into Project Online to enter that data. And then external, like an iPad app that provides portfolio status reports. I think you guys may have seen it at the booth or at some of the other project sessions. A mobile app that allows contractors to update their status. Actually, we have an iPhone app that does that. You can pull approvals from Project and enter them into some external system. So those are just sort of a set of scenarios on why you'd want to build a certain type of app. And so as I described, the kind of flow between them, SharePoint hosted app, all you have is your browser. Is talking to Office to Project Online directly. All the logic, once again, is in the JavaScript. All your business logic is all being executed there. You then also have a provider-hosted app. So you start by clicking on a link from Project Online that takes you to your add-in. And then your add-in redirects you to your site being hosted in Azure, for example. And then the browser will continue the conversation. The browser would continue the conversation to Azure, talking to your endpoint, which could do whatever validation is required. And then your endpoint can take that token information and then call SharePoint Online or Project Online as that user. The last flow is being able to call, like your mobile app calling externally directly. And that's just your app handling all the business logic. There's some authentication work you have to do to get that part done. But then your app can call all the same APIs that anyone else can call, and all your logic's there. And as I said, we have two apps that kind of do this flow today. So, the one thing when you're creating an add-in that's a common gotcha is authorization. So the way authorization works for add-ins is your app, your add-in actually has a set of permissions that you can give to it. And when it comes in, those permissions are called scopes, and you give your app the set of scopes that you want it to have. And what happens on the server is that it takes in whatever your app is set, whatever permissions the user has, and if whatever you're trying to call the intersection of those two is in the intersection of those two, then the call will go through. So for example, if I'm writing a timesheet, a statusing application, but my app doesn't have access to the statusing scope, but it has access to the project scope, that statusing app won't do anything because as soon as it hits the calls, you're going to say, I want to talk to the statusing APIs, but your app only has access to the project endpoint, we will reject all those calls. This is a common gotcha. To be honest, it's caught me 3 or 4 times when I'm writing my app, and I forget to do permissions, and all of a sudden I'm getting no projects back, and I can't figure out why. So the types of scopes we support, and I'll show you these briefly inside of Visual Studio. There's the core project server scope, and that's basically for managing a more admin type functionality that we expose. There's the multiple project one, which is what you would use if you want to write an app that can talk to any project inside that PWA instance. The single project apps are the ones where if you decided to create a project site and you wanted to install the app there, the app would run with a single project permission because it just needs access to the project it was installed upon. The enterprise resource one, that's what's used to access things like statusing, timesheets, so on, and that's what you would use to access the enterprise resources. Status updating is what lets you update the status of your tasks. So you could write an app that says, Bob has done 40 of the 80 hours assigned to him, and he thinks there's 60 hours left still. I'll show you a quick sample about how to do statusing in one of my demos. Reporting, straightforward, and workflow is pretty straightforward. Any questions about the scopes? So the one thing that, since project is isolated by the PWA site, if you give an app access, you're giving access only to that particular PWA site. So if your organization has an HR PWA site and a legal PWA site, and you install an app on one that's kind of isolated, like the app can't talk across PWA sites, and no one in the other PWA site would actually see that app. So you're installing in one place, it's the same model that SharePoint uses for their add-ins. So from the entry points that we support for inside of our endpoints. So there's the entity types, which are different types of projects. There is the project entity type and the enterprise project type. There's the ability to manipulate and read custom fields and the lookup tables, all the workflow stages and phases, enterprise resources, events, and event handlers. So for example, the events and events handlers, that's what you would use to create, to be able to be notified that a project was published. That's the API you would use to tell the service that when a project is published, this is the endpoint I want you to call. How many of you are all familiar with project in general, like the check-in, check-out, and publishing? Okay, so this part should be fairly straightforward. So the project endpoint, you get access to the tasks in the project, the assignments, the enterprise resource pool, and enterprise resources that are in the pool team, the custom fields that are defined on the project, PDPs, entity types, so on. And if you look at the top right, the flow that most of you are familiar with is you would take a published project, you check it out. When you're finished working on it, you publish it back, and then that becomes a new published version. And in the APIs, there's a mirror of most of the objects. So there is a published task, there is a draft task, there is going to be a published assignment, and there's also a draft assignment. These are distinct objects because they may not hold the same data. You can take a published project, you check it out. If you're writing an app, that published task you were looking at, the published task you were looking at may not match a draft task because it could have been changed, it hasn't been published yet. And then obviously the published project is a read-only API because you can't make changes to a published project. You can only make changes to a draft project. So you would check out the project where you get a read-write experience, you make whatever changes you want, and then when you publish it, it gets copied over to the published endpoint. Any questions on that? So the other sort of endpoint I'm going to dig a bit deeper on is enterprise resource. That's where you look at every person that's in project, and through that endpoint, you can expose, there's more than just these two, but you can see the assignments that are assigned to them, the tasks that are assigned to them. And approvals is kind of an interesting flow, which is why I wanted to spend a few minutes on it. So you have your published project, a team member comes in, they see a bunch of what we call status assignments. Those are the assignments of tasks that have been assigned to them. So let's just say Bob has a task assigned to him that says he has to do all the electrical work on the Contoso first floor. So he would log in, and an app would show him, these are the status assignments that are assigned to you, and he would go in and enter, I'm done 40 hours, or I'm done 50%. When he's done entering that in, he would submit his status, and that goes to our approvals workflow, which then you would go into project, the PM can look at that and approve it, and then when the approval happens, it ends up in the draft, and then the PM has to publish the draft for it to go become sort of the state of the world. So we'll cover a little bit about this during one of my demos. Yeah?
The status assignments.
Yes.
Is the status manager still on the assignment level or on a task level? Because in the can only change it on a task level in MS Project Professional.
So we can, I don't know the answer to that question. We can look at the actual documentation of the API and we can see if the status manager is on the task or the assignment. I don't remember. But we can take a look at the actual API for CSOM.
Okay.
So some concepts with CSOM. You have a project context, which represents being able to interact with the service. It holds all the objects and the ability to initialize them. And basically, as you talk, you use this context to say, I want a list of projects. And then you actually tell this context, OK, go populate those objects. So basically, the first time you say, create a bunch of objects for me, they're actually empty objects. There's no data in them until you tell this object here, this context here to say, go populate them for me. So we have client-side objects, which I talked about. There's a project, a task, a collection of projects. And all the objects are proxies until you've told the context to populate them. When you want to load up project information, for example, there's a default set of fields we will return. If you want to have more fields, there's an include method, which allows you to say, I want to include just the default properties. I want to include extra properties included with the default ones, or if I just want to include specific sets. So for example, you could say, just give me the default back. I don't care. It comes with name, ID, some of the basic fields. Or you could say, I need the basic ones, but I also want the owner. Or you could also say, I just give me the owner. I don't care about anything else. So those are the kind of the default, include with default properties, and include. Finally, the execution, which will go and populate these proxy objects. In JSON and C#, there's an ability to say asynchronously. So JSON being a JavaScript model, everything's asynchronous, so you have to worry about callbacks. In C#, you can do either asynchronous or synchronous calls, which means your application will block until the call completes. And then once that call completes, you have all your objects populated with data. So here's a quick snippet of code, how to do it in C#. You would have the project context. You give it the URL of the PWA site you want to talk to. You give it the credentials to talk to your PWA site. I want to get a list of projects. That's the third line. On those projects, I just want the default set of properties. When I execute the fourth line, the array of projects now actually will have data in it. I'll get back 20 objects with the default properties of all my projects. And then I can start looping through. So for example, one of the default properties that come back is name. So I can say in the first project in the list, get me their name. So as I mentioned, there's kind of two libraries here. When would you use one or the other? C#, because it requires something to execute it, it can't be used in the hosted add-in, which is the first sort of model I talked about, where JSON is only available in that first model. A couple of caveats, which I found interesting the first time I used it. In C#, because you have access to the library, you have Visual Studio can do all the completion for you. If you want the dot projects or the name of the property, it's like dot projects dot name. In JavaScript, because those are treated a bit differently, you actually have to use get methods in order to get the information. So if I want to get the list of projects, it's get underscore projects. If I want to get the name, it's get underscore name. We are working on improving our documentation. I've owned the API for about 9 months now, so one of my first things was to try playing with it, and the JSON confused me at first because I couldn't figure out how to do it. So that's why one of the efforts we're doing is updating our documentation to make this more clear for anyone using JSON. Finally, for filtering, C# supports some link-like expressions. You could say, get me the project where ID equals this, or the start date's greater than this. You can do a bunch of filtering on it, where JSON doesn't support any filtering. So you would actually have to, in JSON, you would have to do everything client-side. You would have to request the objects, the projects you want, for example. To show a subset of projects, you would actually have to get them all, sort them through on the browser, saying, throw these ones away, and these are the ones I want to display. So REST is the other endpoint we have. The URL for a REST, if your site URL was whatever, contoso.sharepoint.com/site/PWA, you can see the metadata for OData using the $ metadata tag. And then the endpoint to talk to anything project related, you would go to slash project server at the end. The one thing I do want to call out here, I don't know if I called it out earlier, there was three models you could write with. There was the hosted add-in, there was the provider add-in, and then there was the external. All three of them support REST. Some of them support C# and the other ones support JSON, but all three support REST. And REST is kind of the standard for the web, and most people prefer to use REST. So my recommendation is if you guys were planning to write any new apps, would be to choose REST first. We've acknowledged that REST is where everyone seems to be heading to. So any new functionality that we build in our APIs will always go to REST first. REST being built on top of SharePoint. SharePoint, if you've ever used any of the REST calls, they have this request digest token. And what it does is it's a protection mechanism for cross-site forgery. So what you need to do ahead of time before you make any calls that can change the service is you have to request the digest token first. And then whenever you do a change, a post to the server, you would have to pass in the header for the digest that you were given. I'll have a quick sample of that as well. So one thing that's been introduced in the last 3 to 6 months was limits. So about 6+ months ago, if you wanted to download all the projects, all the tasks, all the assignments from the service, we would let that go. It would go ahead and process it. We've been doing a lot of work to make performance much better. The difference is if you had a lot of projects, a lot of tasks, a lot of assignments in the service, and you executed this request, it would never finish because it would take too long to process. We've done a bunch of work to make it run really, really fast now. Because of that, when we execute that request, it would crash because it would take too much memory up. So to enforce this, we had to put a bunch of limits in place. So everything works much, much faster, but there was a cost to get that to work much better. So for projects right now, the limit is 20, and for enterprise resources, the limit is 1,000. Now, I want to be a little more specific on how that works. If you request project-level fields, and the simple fields like project name, project start date, so on, there is no limit. You can request them for all your projects in your tenant. However, when you start asking for more complex things like who the owner is or the tasks for that project and custom fields for that project, basically anything child-related, you can only ask for that information for 20 projects at a time. Does that make sense to everyone? So looking at the chart at the bottom, if I want the project ID and project name, I can say, just give me all of them. We'll send them all back to you. However, if I start asking for the project ID, project name, and its tasks, we will stop that. You'll get an error. And basically, if you said for these IDs or for the top 20 or for the 20 blocks of whatever it is, if you're using REST, we will then bring all those back. And there's no limit to how many children you can ask for. There's just a limit to how many projects you can ask for. Same with resources. If you want to download all the resources in the service and just ask for the ID and their name, well, I'll gladly hand them over. But if you start asking for all their assignments, for example, well, once you start asking for more complex data types like the children, the enforcement comes into place. And so we would only return back data for the 1,000 that you asked for. So once again, you can page to get all your data. This is just a protection mechanism for us. Any questions? Awesome. So I pretty much covered this. Load the entity you need, the top level fields. And then using the IDs, you'll be able to ask for the children. So here's a quick sample. So I want to load up the project ID and project name. So I'm going to request those fields to be come back. And the second line where it says execute query, I will get all the projects in the service. And the object's ID and the object's name will be have the data I'm looking for. Then I'm basically going to, for example, turn this entire list into an array in my client. And then I'm going to ask for the first 20 of them. So that's what you see block 0, block 1, all the way up to block 20, or block 19, sorry. Now I want to include the ID, the name. I want to include the task, plus the parent of the task. And it can get more complex. And now if I were to execute this, this would pass without a problem. So project in Microsoft Flow, what we have available for someone to consume is we can let you know or let Flow know when a project, a resource, or task has been created. And we also let Flow know that when a project is published. And I took a little snippet there, and we'll create one quickly in a few minutes. But these are the events that can kick off a Flow. And then you could obviously look at what you want actions you want to happen. And if other flows are kicked off and you can choose what actions you want to happen, an example of some of them is you could say, if an email is sent to so-and-so, I want a project created or a resource in a project to be created or a task. There's a kind of few interesting things you could do. You could also check projects in and out, check out resources, so on. So I'll do a very, very simple one, but you can go ahead and play with it. It's quite powerful. It's pretty cool. I just learned about it maybe a month ago, and it's a pretty interesting feature. So the next thing I want to talk about is how to get started with development. First of all, I want to talk about the new development portal we have. If you go to dev.office.com, before this took you to our old documentation. We now have a place where we're working on getting new documentation updated. So where it says project online in this corner here is still the old documentation, and that's what our next step is, to get that up to date, so you guys can easily see the new stuff that's available that we've released over the last 6 to 9 months. One interesting thing we've also published is samples. So right now there's a couple samples, which is like how to read custom fields using, so if it says CSOM, it's using the .NET C# library. If it says REST, it's using REST. And I think there should be at least one JSON. So there are about 6 samples here. There's going to be about 3 to 4 more added in the next month or so. So how to read custom fields using C#, how to do some basic REST operations. This is local custom fields. This is something new that that wasn't available in the previous version of CSOM. You can now read the local custom fields of a project. This one's reading the enterprise custom fields of a project. And this one is copying work packages using JSON. I'm going to show you how to do this with REST. So that was one of my demos, but there's about 5 or 6 samples, and as I said, we're going to be adding more. The other things I want to point out here is there will be a new getting started experience probably posted in the next couple of weeks. This is the project client specific. This is being able to submit items to the store so that people can actually add, like purchase or consume your add-in. So if you want to do a client add-in or a SharePoint add-in for the project line service, this will be the instructions to do that. There's Stack Overflow is a link specific for project now where you can post questions there, and hopefully the community will hopefully help you, or we'll look at them and we'll hopefully answer. And there's also User Voice. How many people know about User Voice? One. Okay, so I'll bring that up. So User Voice is kind of a lot of Microsoft properties are moving towards this, where you can create an account and you will have 10 votes that you can choose either to create a new feature or new request for us to look at and hopefully build, or to vote on one to be built. So for example, it's closed now, but the one of the top requests was being able to read local custom fields in CSOM, so that was actually one of the first ones we fulfilled. But you'll see a bunch of them listed here, and you can go ahead and vote, and we'll respond accordingly if it makes sense, if it doesn't make sense. But feel free to check this out. We actually look at this every time we are trying to design features, or if we're debating on something changing, we'll look at people are saying, they say, this is not working well, this is working very well, we really want this. So for example, last connection was removed from Project Online the last time a user was connected. There's a lot of feedback for it, and we actually have an alternative way of doing it. And then like Chris, for example, if you look it up, he would explain why we decided to remove that feature. But then there's also a way for us to communicate the workarounds that are available that make sense. But this is probably the best place to go to for vote, and we do talk about this during our features and spec reviews. And then Stack Overflow for getting feedback and asking for help. So covered all that. So what do you need to get started? What should I do? So the first thing you need to get started is a Project Online tenant, specifically you need a Project Online subscription somewhere. So some of you who have Project Online, you can create a new PWA site and you can start playing with it there. It's pretty safe because the app is scoped to only talk to that PWA site. If you don't have a PWA site, there's an Office 365 developer subscription that I'm assuming in the next 2 weeks Project will now be included with. People have asked this in the past of how to be able to get to it. We're working on getting it added. I was actually hoping it would be added this week so I could show it, but it's not there yet. But it will be added, I'm guessing, in the next 2 weeks, and then you could always get one of those subscriptions. And there's also a 30-day free trial, so you can always try it out. Otherwise, I think it's about $10 per month, and you get one subscription for one user. But then it also includes SharePoint and a bunch of other stuff in there as well, so you can build sort of a cross workload experience if you wanted to. Whenever you're doing anything on a PWA, and if you want to deploy an app, the first thing you might have to do is enable sideloading of apps because Visual Studio can't access, doesn't have the permissions to access. There's a script, a PowerShell script that you basically enter in your site URL, authentication credentials, and it will turn on sideloading. So that in Visual Studio, if you create a new app, you could hit debug and you could step through your app and it can communicate. It'll take care of the deployment and uninstalling and installing depending on what you've permissions and stuff you've changed. You can write apps using Visual Studio 2013 or 2015. The recommendation is you should install the Office Developer Tools for Visual Studio. That'll make life creating a package and all the stuff that needs to go around defining a package straightforward. If you want to do an external application, you could obviously just use REST and use Eclipse or any other development, Notepad, whatever you want to write apps against us, but Visual Studio kind of being the easiest one because we do a bunch of the work for you. Also, if you're planning to use the C# library, we're now releasing it on a regular cadence. SharePoint has a NuGet package where you could download, and I think they released updated approximately every 3 months. And so every time we do any changes to the CSOM package, you would be able to go there and get the latest update. And I'll demonstrate how to get that CSOM package. So the first demo I'm going to show you is how to bring down the assignments assigned to the current user that's logging in, and how to just mark them off as 100% complete to keep it simple, how to submit the status, and then I'll show you how you can tell, how the PM can tell it's been done. The one caveat I want to point out is my machine is somehow hard-coded to our Microsoft IT environment, so a lot of places it'll give me authentication errors saying I'm trying to access a site I don't have access to because my Microsoft account doesn't have access to the demo data, so you shouldn't see this normally. Just want to bring that up. So here's our PWA site. I'm going to go refresh it. And you will see that there's no approvals waiting for the PM to approve. I'll run the application. So the first thing I need to do is provide a PWA site. There is a way, and this is included in a sample that's already posted, how to connect and take care of the credentials. And this will support multi-factor auth. Obviously, if you ask the user for the login and password, most people might be nervous about giving an app a login and password. They'd rather use the Office 365 to handle the authentication. And the login and password doesn't handle things like two-factor authentication. So in the sample here, there's a way using on the Windows platform that it'll load up a browser window and take care of all the two-factor auth. So let's log in. So what's happening right now is, let's go through the code of connecting. So when I hit connect, the first thing we're going to do is connect to the PWA site. I'm creating an authenticated context. This returns back the project context. And this code here, which is another project including the solution, kind of handles the whole authentication, the browser window popping up. In the end, if everything's successful and this code returns, I would have a project context that can make calls to project online. The next thing we do is going to load up all the assignments. There's quite a few in this tenant, which is why I'm going through the code. The first thing I want to do is get the representation of myself. And I'm going to ask for myself, I want my name, all my assignments, and I want the project included. This will run. Then I'm going to display who I am. And I'm going to go ahead, and this is kind of just UI goo, but I'm going to go ahead and check if the assignment is 100. If it's not 100% complete, I'm going to make an assignment object that's unchecked. If it is 100% complete, then I'll say it's checked. And that's where we'll stop. So if I open this back, I'll get all the assignments in my tenant. Now, this being a demo tenant and there only being one user in it, all the data is assigned to me. I didn't get a chance to clear it out. So just to keep it simple, I'm going to check off 3 assignments. And I'm going to, by hitting submit here, it'll actually mark them as 100% complete. So it's now being marked as complete. So what did it mean when I submitted it? So this is kind of just UI goo, But what I'm doing is I'm getting each assignment, and if it was checked off, I'm marking it as 100% complete, so it'll be complete as far as the PM is concerned, or I'm marking it as zero, and I'm doing all those updates. So then I'm telling the assignments to do an update. I'm submitting it without any comments, because I don't know how many people actually use the comments, and for the demo, I don't care, and then execute. So executing will actually go through each one of those assignments on the server and mark them as zero or 100% complete and submit the status. So now if I go to approvals, hit refresh, if all the stars align, I'll have the three updates I made. Any questions about the statusing app? So this one's posted. You guys will be able to take a look at it on the GitHub site where the samples are posted. So I'm going to try a more complex app. The first thing I want to do is I'm going to make a flow. And what I want it to do is whenever the project is published, I want it to send an email to the current user. So project. Provide it the URL. So the next step, I want it to send me an email. So in the email, I want it to go to me. So I'm entering in my email. What I want it to include in the name is the name of the project and was published. I have not looked that deeply, but we can check. Try checking it out in a second. Let's create this one. Flow name required. Okay, so you were saying, can I find out when a timesheet was submitted? I don't think we support that. But let me make a note. That's good feedback. Okay. So I'll talk a bit more about the app I want to build next. Just there's some logic that needs to be understood. So the copy work package. So as I said, there's already a demo of this using JSON, and I'm going to be doing one REST. So the scenario here is the PMO office has come up with a best practice using a standard set of tasks for common repeatable work, and what the PM can copy over these tasks into the projects. And so the way these tasks are defined is we have a software work packages. There's a bunch of summary tasks, which are the blocks of unit I can copy, and the light blue squares are the tasks I want to copy over. So I have my project integrate vendor module. It has two tasks on it. And my goal is to be able to copy the testing node over with all the children below it. So I should, in the end, have a node, a project that looks like this. And while this might seem straightforward, there's a bit of logic required to, if you think about it, to copy all these over, I need to build a task tree because I can't create the children until the parent is there, all that kind of fun stuff. So there'll be some parts of the code I'll just reference to, but it's just code in general. But I'll talk about how to create the task and how to get all this information. So first thing I want to call out in my app here is security. So under the app manifest, you'll see permissions, and you're going to see that I have multiple read-write access permission, and that allows my app to make changes. If I don't do this, if I don't have this permission here, you will get no projects back when you ask even to list them. So I'll skim through some of this. This is the part that gets called. That's not that important. So when I make any REST calls to the service, I want to use JSON. If I have the request digest I told you about that you need to be able to send back to make post calls, I'll set it up here. And I want to get an idea of what the URL is to call SharePoint and what the URL is to call project. So this is usually going to be the site URL, so sharepoint.com/site/pwa/whatever. This code here is what's going to get me the initial request token. So SharePoint has this thing called context info. I make a post to it, I get it back, and I'm just going to store it for the time being. And the other thing I want to call is the size of the projects I'm allowed to retrieve. So as I said before, the limit is 20 right now, but the limit can change. And so if I go to the endpoint, we have a bunch of them posted here. And you will see for time phase for project, it's size 20. So the nice thing here is if we have to, we get to increase it, or if we have to decrease it for whatever reason, you can actually get the information here. So your code should look at the number here to decide how big of a page to request for. So to load projects, I'm going to make a REST call to the project's endpoint. I want the ID, the name, the start date. I want to know if it's checked out. And I also want to expand. I want to know who the owner is. How many of you are familiar with OData? Okay, so the way it works is you can access the top-level properties. If you want to ask children, you have to expand them. So owner is a child, so you have to I have to expand it. I want it sorted by name, and I want to get the top 20, and then I'll skip over it. I'll do a sort of a loop that downloads all the, makes multiple calls if needed to get them all. So once I have them all, I call display projects. And that'll go ahead and loop through all the projects that I found. And if it was checked in, checked out, I'll display it. The name of the project, I'll include the owner with the name of the project. And if it was checked out, this is more UI goo. I'm not overly worried about it. So when it's finished loading, you'll see that I have a list of projects. I have the name of the owner, and none of these are actually checked out. I also have the same list of projects without the owner. I guess I should have included it in, but this is going to be the target. So if you remember our scenario, I'm going to choose a source project and a target project. So the next thing I need to do is when I choose a project, I want to get the tasks. And I specifically don't want all the tasks. I want a subset of them. And I only want to display some of them. So I want to get the ID, the name, and if they're summary. And I could have filtered by summary. I didn't for this example. And this will download all the tasks in the project I selected. And there's no limit in this case. So if there's 100,000 tasks, one call will do it. And I'm only calling it for the selected project. And then I'll display the tasks, which is just a dropdown, so I won't cover that part. So I'm going to choose. Let me just bring this up. Software work packages. So it's done loading. You'll see it here, all the data that came back. You can see it all, but in general, these are it. And as I told you guys, I'm reading from published data, so these are all published tasks, so I can't make any changes to them. So I'm going to choose a summary task that I want to copy, so testing. And I'm going to choose my target project, which will be my software project. So we go load up that data, and there's only two tasks in it. And I'm going to say whatever's in the testing task, whatever's below it, I want it copied over here. So when I click submit, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to have to build this whole tree up in memory to figure out where all the children, the grandchildren, and so on and so forth. That's just because I have to maintain the order when I create them, because you can't create the child without the parent, and Project Server will tell you, I don't know who the hell the parent is, go away, type of idea. So I'm not going to cover that code. That's really straightforward. So the first thing I need to do when I hit submit is I need to check out the project, because I want to be able to write to it. I then want to start creating all these tasks. So for all the tasks I need to create, I'm going to set the source name. I'm going to copy the source name. If it's manual, the duration, the start date, the finished, and the parent task. If it's been created, that'll exist. If it hasn't been created yet, I would have created it a few seconds earlier going down this loop. And I'm going to call the tasks add endpoint to actually create those tasks. So we'll go ahead and start that. And you'll see all this adding happen. Once I am done, there's no more tasks left to be created. I'm going to publish the project, so obviously it goes out and now becomes the plan of record. Publishing the project with true also checks it back in for me. So let's see. So I'm going to call the draft on the current project. I'm going to call on the draft endpoint. I'm going to say publish true, and then I'm going to wait for the project to finish publishing. So how familiar you guys are you with the publishing system, like the queue and all that type of stuff? So that queue still exists when you use the CSOM endpoint, so I'm going to wait for the queue to finish, and since it's now finished, it says my software project's been updated. So now if I look at some of the network calls that were happening here, you'll see the ads kind of finished. I called publish, and then I'm just queuing. I'm looking at the queue for my project to find out until nothing's in that queue, which is a publish. And once that happens, I'm assuming it's done, and then you saw your nice pop-up. This is just how to, on the draft, queue jobs, I'm looking for message 24, which is publish, and I just keep looping over and over again until I find it, waiting a second in between. So now if I were to open up my project, and all the stars aligned again, so there it is, under service testing, all these tasks now exist, which was my goal. And to show you the original thing I copied it from, and that's why I chose to copy testing, and that's why you kind of see the same nodes there. Now the last part, which I don't know if it worked, would be that I published a project. And 1 minute ago, I got an email saying a project was published. That's using Flow. Anyone have questions about the demo? Awesome. So. From my original goal, I hope you guys understand what kind of add-ins can be created, the client API and the server API, how to integrate with Flow, and what you need to do to get started. I explained about the NuGet package, the developer landing page that has most of this information will be posted. Some additional references, this will be when this deck goes out, you can see the links, so the link to the portal, the sample apps we have posted right now, how to get the NuGet package. Actually, I think I forgot to show you that part. Let's just try that quickly. So if you have Visual Studio, I think above the free edition, you can do this using the command line as well. NuGet. So if you look at browse, come on. Now I think the internet's not working, so let's try this the other way. So you see this, the Microsoft SharePoint Project Online CSOM package, which includes all the CSOM libraries SharePoint provides and includes project. Maybe there was just a new update. They just did a new update yesterday. So you're going to see them being fairly updated either monthly to every 3 months. The goal is to update at least every month with any new changes. So this would include SharePoint changes as well. And then the link about adding sideloading. So that enables you to debug your projects online. So I'm almost on time. I had 15 minutes for questions. Does anyone have any questions?
You have said that REST API will get updated first.
Yes. We'll do it depending on the feedback we get. We'll see how the rest one works out, and then we would, if there's a lot of feedback to do it through C#, CSOM, then we would release it there. But my recommendation would be to all new apps you should write in REST.
In REST, okay. Then when I want to program in C#, and then I should use the REST and the CSOM API.
It's a sample in case people want to start that way to understand how the flow works, but you can write all the REST calls via C#.
Okay, this is the recommended way.
This is now the recommended way, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have written in the past tons of PowerShell script with the old PSI. This is no longer with the PSI interface for our project server. This is no longer available in 2016. It was deprecated in 2013.
Yeah.
And in 2016,
it's been removed.
It fell out. Eh?
Yes.
Is there an easy way to connect with simple PowerShell script? I do it. I'm administrator for project server. There's a simple way for PowerShell to connect to project server or project online, because it is much more difficult to execute REST queries or the CSOM queries with the PowerShell, because when I write a script, I will do administrative tasks. I don't write a super perfect script which will run forever. I will move things around and to create new projects and so on. It's only administrative tasks.
Yeah, the only thing for online right now will be CSOM, and even on project server, the project endpoint has been removed. The other endpoints are still there, but the project one has been removed. So there's a sample here on how to call REST from PowerShell, including how to do the authentication. There's a sample.
But this is much more difficult with the old PSI, new web service proxy, and the URL, and you got it.
Yeah.
You call it. Super easy.
I agree, but PSI is not going to be the way of the future. We're moving to more REST endpoints, and so the PSI, that's why you don't find the PSI available online anymore. And PSI, for example, if you think about if I want to make an app that calls call the PSI endpoint, using PSI with data sets and JavaScript is not a lot of fun. And we're moving to another, like, this is REST is what more people are familiar with. That's why we're moving that direction. So there is a way to call. There's a sample posted on the GitHub site about how to do it with REST. I know it's not as nice with the objects. I agree with you there.
Yeah, but from administrative point of view, there's a user here has rename all tasks in a project. This has to be done only once. So it is more effort to connect with this, with PowerShell, for this one specific task.
No, I see what I understand what you're getting at. I do understand.
Okay.
But you have other problems now if you start doing a bunch of changes to tasks. If there's more than 250, there's certain CSOM limits and so on, right? There's fewer limits that way on REST. If you had more than 250-ish, 260 tasks, I think. Like if you try to create a project and put in 250-ish tasks, there's a limit to how much you can create in one request. You have to do multiple requests then. REST doesn't have these problems. REST is all single requests. But you could rename your tasks in REST as well. Like I agree that the C# library and CSOM is easier to use because it's more object oriented.
Yeah.
But we're trying to focus and we're trying to build more API surface. And the easiest way for us to do this is REST. And a way for us to hit a wider audience is REST, right? Like you mentioned, it's once in a while you have to do this, but more people write apps.
And
that's why I said like all three interfaces all support REST. Yeah. So there's you don't have that one limit of 250 tasks.
It's a higher limit. It is a limit. It exists. There is a limit.
There is a limit, yeah. But in REST, you're making multiple calls anyway, so it doesn't really make a difference for single calls. And some people will try to make a big batch. That is not supported in REST.
Okay. Yes, and then my question from before was with the status manager.
So we can take a look at that. Anyone else have other questions before I can dig deeper on this? So the REST endpoint is available in Project 2016, and so if you go to the $ metadata that I pointed to in the deck, you can see what's supported when we ship 2016. So 2016, just to give you background, is about 15 months old. Like, I know we just officially shipped it, but we took what was online in the summer, said, okay, this is what's shipped in the box. So anything we've shipped in the summertime since then will not necessarily be included unless we get the feedback that people need it. And one of the things we have removed in 2016 was the project PSI endpoint. Yeah?
Do you have any APIs that helps us create the project site itself?
So,
project schedule?
What do you mean project schedule? Like, so we support creating the start date, end date. Like, if you think about it, I copied all these tasks.
Right.
Yes. So that right there shows you how to do it from REST. So this is using PowerShell, but the REST call would not be any different. You just got to call the, I think it's the slash projects. Yeah, here, you call this endpoint here. Yeah, no problem. I'm just a little too many computers here to follow. This is PowerShell, but if you think of the REST request, it's parameters, ID, name, description, and you post that to project server slash project slash add.
Can I include those in
code? Yeah, this is REST. You can include it. You can use Java if you want. It doesn't really make a difference to us. Just one caveat, as I mentioned before, you would have to look at the request digest thing whenever you do a REST. Whenever you do a call, they can make a change. Okay, so you want to ask about the status manager. I can tell you from, we can look at it from the API side.
Yeah, because in 2013, the status manager has to be set on the task and read on the assignment, as I guess. Because it exists on the assignment, but when you look into it and check with Query and Liza, there's a select top one status manager from the assignments of all tasks. Means that the status manager exists on the assignment, but only
can be set on the task, is what you're saying?
Yes. It is set on all assignments, but it is always the same on all assignments on a task.
So
in 2013, you must be set on the task and read from the assignment. This is why I asked. This
no.
was always so.
I don't know the answer, but.
When you look in the database, there is no status manager column under the task. It exists only on the assignment.
You might be right. So there's a status manager on the task here. And you said.
In 2010, it was even worse. There was a status manager column on the task, but when you read it, it is always null. You have to write it each assignment. It's really
yeah, there is no status manager on the assignment. Still.
Okay, it is now completely on the task. This should be a better solution, yes?
Yes.
It can be read and written on the task.
Yeah, and we don't even support reading it from the assignment, by the looks of it. Owner of the task, parent, resource. Yeah, there's no status manager anymore.
Okay.
It's only from the task. So I can bring up the task again if you want. So the assignment doesn't have any concept of a status manager associated with it.
Okay, then status manager is now on the task.
Yes.
Read and write on the task, okay.
I don't know about write. We'd have to try it out.
Yeah, write this in 2013. You
okay, then
it's
probably
there. The assignment.
Yeah, so there it is. So it's on this is the task.
Okay, it's the same as 2013.
Yeah.
Write on the assignment and read on the task.
No, it's not on the assignment. I can't even see it. There's no property called status manager on an assignment anymore. It's on the task now.
write it on the assignment?
No, this is the task.
Okay.
So the task only has a status manager. There's no status manager on an assignment.
Okay. It is now only on the task.
Yeah. Also, something else that which I meant to mention is that project summary task is also available now too through CSOM. It wasn't there before.
Okay. Yeah, the project summary task is something different.
Yeah. No, I'm just giving you a heads up that it's there.